Okay, Jerry, you drove 5 hours. You placed the guy as a contract IT programmer, and then you drove 5 hours to go and have lunch with the guy. And I want to ask you why you did that, and I don't know. Go ahead. It seemed odd to me.
Okay. I think what's odd is that it sounded odd to you. To me, it's I wouldn't think of anything else but if I have an employee somewhere, anywhere, immediately going out to, bring the person up close and personal. I think too many times out here we're all sending emails or tweets and all of that, and you don't see who the real person is. And the guy, frankly, was surprised. He said, "Are you doing anything else in town?" I said, "No, I just came out
to have lunch." Yeah, he was surprised because it was kind of stupid.
Are you serious?
Does anybody agree with Jerry that it was worth? Was it worth taking a 5-hour trip? Anybody agree?
Absolutely.
Only Jerry can tell you if it was worth it.
Oh, and it was worth it.
Then it was worth it.
Five hours each way. That's 10 hours or 12 hours. You said, right?
Yeah, and I know the guy a lot better, a lot better than just the several times that we were on the phone and you know sending paperwork back and forth. And I know it's pretty easy when you put a contractor to work somewhere to, just expect their timesheet to come in every week and you send them their check. But it really, if I have to explain the value of a personal relationship to you, that shocks me. Do you think it's stupid? Are you serious?
He doesn't know, Jerry, because he doesn't close very many deals. If he closed a lot of deals, then he would be able to see big dollar signs and getting
money. Yeah, you know what? I got to tell you something. Wait one sec. Harry Joyner, the marketing headhunter who just said that, he never leaves his office. He goes from his home to his office and back. You don't travel anywhere. Am I right, Harry?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But that doesn't mean that going to see people is stupid. I mean, I can absolutely identify with that. But there are candidates.
Okay.
By the way, I will say this. There are candidates that I've placed in one job for tens of thousands of dollars.
Right, right.
And then they've used me as a recruiter to hire people for tens of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they were burned out and ready to go do something else, I placed them yet again for tens of thousands of dollars, and then they continued to use me as a recruiter to source people for their department.
And you never met him once.
I might have met him at conferences. I mean, I do go to conferences.
Anybody else want to comment on that?
Well, I think it's worthwhile to go visit them for tens of thousands of dollars.
Have you ever visited anybody, Andy Gregory?
I have, clearly.
How far did you travel?
I've never driven 12 hours round
trip. How far did you travel?
Next week, I don't leave my subdivision. So as long as they live here. No, I'm going next week to Columbus, Ohio. So that's 2.5. Man, that's 5 hours round trip.
Where are you going?
To meet one placement. Who got to meet a guy you placed in a job?
Yeah, but it's it's just going to be worth it. So it needs to happen. I'm going to go. By the way, I'm also visiting the client as well as the candidate. So, I'm more inclined to go visit
the candidate, or is it the placement?
I'm more inclined to go visit the actual hiring authority than I am the candidate. But I don't do contract work that he's talking about. So
I don't go meet just candidates. Otherwise, I mean, I'd be driving around the country every day. But this guy's an employee of mine.
Uh-huh.
And so why would anybody not want to meet an employee? That he represents me.
Uh-huh.
I don't see how you could have a contractor working somewhere and not have met them, unless it's in Alaska. But, heck, that'd just be a good reason to go to Alaska. I'll go anywhere.
There you go.
Any new potential recruiting client, I'll always go meet them before I've placed anybody. Always. 100%.
You would get on a plane to meet them? Would you get on a plane to meet them?
Sure.
Really?
Have before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Jerry, though, you told me these IT contractors, they're very bad about getting back to you when they're going to leave, right? So if you meet them how can that be a problem? In effect, that's the worst thing that could happen. The guy leaves without giving you any notice. And if you go out and meet these guys, it doesn't seem to be doing what you want it to do.
That's an interesting point, Animal, and I'm trying to do my best to eliminate that. So anytime
Okay.
What do you mean, yeah, okay?
Nothing. I think you answered the other question just now.
Okay.
Anybody else? I have a lot of questions for Jerry. Anybody else want to ask him a question?
I was just wondering, is the contractor is somebody you placed?
Yes.
Right. So I believe that if Jerry wanted to go establish a relationship with this guy, it would probably, on the back end of things, if this guy was going to leave suddenly, he probably would call Jerry and give him a heads up versus Jerry not being there. And it could help Jerry to replace him very quickly without, you know, the company saying, well, your guy
left.
Yeah,
that's the idea. Cliff, we made it clear. That's the theory. It doesn't work in practice.
But,
I'd like to address Cliff's thought there. That's specifically a conversation that I had with my contractor at lunch.
Right.
He said, and this guy, he contracts all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I can't tell you how many times I have to talk to whoever the sourcer is or the recruiter, and we talk about what kind of job I want, you know, what my salary or race are. Pretty soon I'm moved up the ladder and I'm talking to the account manager and I have to go through the whole life story again. And if they don't have a job for me at that one time, I never hear from these people again. He was quite surprised that I went up there and had lunch with him.
Okay, he was surprised. Now, how many times, what percentage of your... There's a bad echo here. What percentage of your guys actually default? They disappear without letting you know?
Far fewer now than years ago when I never met anybody.
Okay, so you think that the meetings have reduced the shrinkage rate or disappearance rate or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, they see me as more of a person that's interested in who they are and what they're about. And
do you maintain contact with them over the period they're in the contract?
All the time.
So you do relationship management as well?
Well, the way I look at it is, let's say your profit is even $10 or $15 an hour. That's $30,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take as many $30,000 a year positions that I can. And part of that role, part of that salary that I'm being paid is get to know these guys, take them out to lunch, make sure that they're plugged in with me. I'd love to do that with 100 people, believe me. So that's
okay.
Part of my job.
Now somebody at Marianne Verver asked, how often do you touch base with these guys?
I like constantly.
Like what does
all
that
all
mean?
All the time.
Well, what does
they,
all the time mean?
When they
you know, Mary
the,
Joyner's got a saying, numbers kill opinion. Something like that. So you give us numbers,
the
okay?
Thing is, there's nothing as devastating to an opinion as a number.
Yeah, okay. So you just give us numbers, okay?
Luckily,
how often do you contact
luckily I've
these
got
guys?
Numbers.
Okay, how often do you...
All the time.
At
a minimum, every 2 weeks when they send their timesheet in to me,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find a different way to tell them how I appreciate it. Hey, thanks for your time. You're a great guy. Let's have lunch Monday. All the time. I acknowledge the fact that I am making money from the work that they're doing, and I value it highly. It's my
uh-huh.
job. It's what I do.
Like what you just say, you're a great guy for what? I mean, it sounds insincere to me.
It's not insincere. I know these people. They know that I am a genuine person.
Yeah, you're genuine. Like, you're a great guy because you're making money for me. Is that really? That's really what it amounts to, right? I'm just wondering, how do you maintain a relationship?
I don't know.
Could I interject something?
These people come to my. These people come to my home, Animal. They, I mean, they're a part of my livelihood, and I go above and beyond just being a recruiter that finally placed them on a contract somewhere.
So you're kind of like
Mr.
Fizzywig in the Christmas Carol. The workers are part of your workers, and they were getting paid by you. They're part of the extended Albright family. Is that
sure?
Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hams and everything.
Oh, at Christmas time.
Yeah.
Send them hams.
Sure.
Okay.
Or bacon.
Could I interject something as a person who's a contractor who's been hired as a contractor? I don't know if anybody, I mean, not as a recruiter, but as somebody actually hired by a recruiting firm to do a job. So I think, you know, when you get hired by this, your contract recruiting firms, they're big organizations that make you drive 2.5 hours to go through a perfunctory interview to make sure you're not a criminal. They place you in a job where they've got 50 or 60 other contractors. You don't hear from them until you have a problem. You try and get your problem resolved, and the person that got you in there, is Jerry has recounted, is not the person who's managing your account.
Mm-hmm.
You have no relationship with the person who is supposed to be taking care of you, and these people really don't take care of you. So then you're out there in Never Never Land. You don't know who to ask. You don't know who to contact. And then you rely on the people you're working for, the managers, and they get embroiled in the employer side of stuff, and that's the kiss of death.
Yeah,
so,
Cliff, that's an interesting point because in a conversation I had at lunch in Madison, I specifically brought up the fact that I said, you know, Sudhir, it's interesting how recruiters are your greatest friend during the whole interviewing process, and when they finally place you, the next thing they hear from you is that you're leaving.
Right.
And I'm here to make sure that if you decide you do want to bail out here, because it started off kind of tenuous, as most contracts do.
Right.
I said, I want you to be able to call me first. And
right.
he said, absolutely, I sure will.
Right, and I agree with that. I mean, you're going to make more money by building, you know, relationships than you would if you didn't. Because I've been placed by recruiters, and I hate the recruiters that place me, and then I'm done.
And I think that's the point. I mean, I think that's why we should go see these people, because we know problems are going to happen.
Right, exactly.
Especially
during
the holidays.
Okay, now, Jerry, let me just say, Jerry, that guy actually has a problem. I talked to Jerry about this guy. They're not giving him enough work. Is that right, Jer?
Yeah, and we've sorted that out. But, I mean, that was one of the issues starting off was he thought maybe he got started a little bit too early, and he wasn't being utilized, and we talked about how to go talk to a different group and volunteer for some other projects, and everything's working out well.
Yeah, okay.
You know, that's stuff
that
you're just not going to hear that in just a few emails back and forth. Hey, how's it going? They're not going to tell you. You need them to know that anything that comes up, they can talk to you and should talk to you first, because you either want to straighten it out, and if it's not the right place, then I'll definitely go find somewhere else where this person could work.
Could I extend my story? Could I extend my story, because it's really important, you know, because Jerry...
Go ahead.
Look, I was facing the very same problem that Jerry was talking about with his contractor that he placed. I went to the firm that placed me there, and they basically said, do whatever you want, you're there, you know, we have no control over workflow. So that put me in a very anxiety-ridden position, because I was sitting around doing nothing, and I was getting paid, you know, a fair amount of money to sit there 8 hours a day and do nothing. So then I just said, you know what, I got to go talk to my boss, who hired me, you know, essentially where I was placed, and talk about what else can I do. So and that exposed me even more, rather than the recruiting firm going, like, you know, Cliff has expressed that, you know, they were no longer representing me, and I have to put myself on the line then. You know what I mean?
I don't know. That seems normal. Okay, let me just interrupt you. We don't have much time left for Jerry's
section. Okay, sure.
That doesn't seem abnormal that you have to go to your own boss. I mean, the normal perm place, if you place someone in a permanent placement, you know, I'm a recruiter. I can't go and complain
to
the...
No, but it's different as a contractor. Contractors need reassurance and feedback from the people that place them to let them know that the employer is happy and there are no issues. If
sometimes
you don't get
animal,
that,
sometimes contractors are thrown in with a group of, you know,
exactly.
15 other people, and it's like, fight for yourself,
right.
Get some work, prove that you're worth $100 an hour to be here.
Exactly, and that's a drill you face every day as a contractor.
Yeah, okay, give Jerry a chance, will you, Cliff? He's a star of this show. I appreciate you chipping in there. Now, wait a second, Jerry, because your time's going to be up in a sec. The thing is, these guys still have a reason not to call you when they want to leave, because they know they're your bread and butter, your meal ticket, and they know you're not going to be happy when they want to go, and that you're going to try to talk them into staying there. Now, maybe you're the one in a million recruiter who says, no, I'm going to find you another person, But most guys, why should they call their contract recruiters, the people who put them in there? They're just going to bug them to do something that's maybe not in their best interest.
Animal, you're absolutely correct, and I'm doing the best I can to cut that off at the pass. And I can tell you, by being someone that goes to lunch or stops by to take everybody out for a beer after work, you have a much better chance of having the phone ring when there is a problem than the person who just sits here looking at timesheets months on end, and then all
absolutely
of a sudden your guy's
gone. Absolutely,
I
agree with that. I agree with that.
Okay. Should we do another topic before you have to leave, Jer, before you have to sit on the couch and it's Dave's turn? Jerry,
I'm
still there?
I'm with you. Hey, man, whatever's going on.
Okay, well, I want to talk about fee agreements and these guys. Now, you put up a library on jerrytherecruiter.com.
Recruitinglibrary.com.
Okay, recruiting
library. Help on that.
Go to recruitinglibrary.com. Jerry put up a bunch of his recruiting forms, templates that anybody can use. He's looking for other people who want to submit theirs. I think it's a great idea. And one of the forms he's got there is a form that you get the contractor to sign with you. Am I right, Jerry? There's a lot of them. I'd like to talk about the others another time, but there's a form that the contractor signs.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
It's an agreement, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's it called?
Contractor agreement.
Okay. Now, what's – now
I try to make the titles fairly self-explanatory.
Obvious. Okay.
There's
now,
one
you
called
told
the fee statement.
Yeah, okay. You told me that you got screwed by one of your contractors once, and
sure
that
did.
That prompted you to do the form. Can you tell us the story and how the form solved the problem?
Well, the form didn't solve that problem.
No.
I've always used contractor agreements, but when I started my own agency, I had to put my own together pretty quick. I placed a contractor to work right off the bat, and as most cases where you end up getting screwed – can I say that word?
Yeah, that's Brianne. Don't
yes.
even ask me.
Brianne?
You can ask Brianne.
I said yes, yes.
Okay,
thank
okay.
you, Brianne.
Okay.
I can almost hear you today, thank goodness. Go ahead.
The long story short is I did not have a no-compete agreement in there. And
uh-huh.
For those of you not in the know, that's the part where they say they're not going to screw you, meaning they will not work directly as a contractor for your client in the place that you put them to work. And right,
so happened with this
So
guy?
The long story short on this, it was a six-month contract, and most contracts are kind of ambiguous anyway. You don't get an actual 6 months. I mean, it's this is how long we'll need someone. Well, at the end of that 6 months, the guy called me up and he said, hey, I want to thank you a lot for helping me get my start, and I think I'm going to start my own business. And I thought, hey, that's cool. Does that mean you're not going to stay at the company? I'm not giving the company name, but you're not going to stay there. And he says, oh no, yeah, I'm going to stay here, but I think I'm going to start my own business. And I said, well, you can't do that. And he said, well, we looked at the agreement, and it's okay if I do that. And yeah, sure enough, I mean, it was my mistake that I didn't put that in there. And so it cost me about $200,000.
Wow. Uh-huh.
That hurt.
So then you put it in for the future. Am I right about that?
Oh, absolutely.
So your time is coming to the end, Jerry, and I'm going to ask, does anybody have any questions for Jerry Albright?
Yeah. What's the best kind of wine to serve with duck?
You know it.
Yeah.
Pinot.
Okay. Jerry, I don't know what Jerry did wrong, but there's only 12 people on the line now. There was around like 18 before, okay? So.
No, I don't think that's Jerry's fault.
Maybe it's your fault, Rianne. Okay, thanks, Rianne. Just step to the side. I don't want to lose everybody. Dave, are you there?
I'm to the side.
Dr. David Kippen. You know, this guy, you know, Cliff Mintz always comes on whenever you're on, just to prove that you don't have the top, that you're not the top PhD on this show. There's two of them, not just you, okay?
I say something. I just showed up because I had nothing to do today. I finished met all my deadlines.
Yeah.
You were Global VP of Global Services for TMP, and that's a very large recruitment advertising firm, and you've recently become an owner of Eviva Brands, EVVIVA Brands Com, and that's a company that specializes in employment branding. Am I right? And employment engagement. Am I right?
You are right. Thank you for the lovely plug. I was actually VP of Global Brand Strategy at
CNC,
so it's a little bit closer to what I'm currently doing, but that's
okay.
It.
There you were. Okay. Now I don't know any. I'm not a corporate recruiter. I don't know anything about employment branding, really. So I got one of my Twitter buddies, Mark, as I said at the beginning, Mark D. Sullivan. He's got it all backwards on Twitter. It's Sullivan Mark D. And he told me I could say, I don't know why he wanted me to, but I will. He said I didn't have to, but he's the director of talent acquisition for the Texas region for Time Warner Cable. And he gave me a bunch of questions, and I'm going to ask you those questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, the intro, though, is he read an article on John Sullivan on ERE, and John Sullivan said something that, what's her name, from Charlene Lee from Forrester said a few years ago. Corporations used to control nearly all the information that made them visible, that was released about them. Social media took away monopoly control of information. Companies can no longer control their brand because there's all these ex-employees and people, in fact, who are still working there, giving out information, not just on their blogs, not just on Twitter, but he considers text messaging a kind of social phenomenon as well. So that's sort of, I think, Mark's starting off point. Ready?
Yep. So the heart of the question is, do you even need to think about a brand now that social media is out there? And what's the impact of all of these voices? I'd say the brand is more important now than ever, but the idea that you could control the brand has always been a fallacy. You can't. A brand is a conversation around experiences. What you can try to control as an organization is the quality and kind of experiences people have and associate with your company, right? So if you're Starbucks, when people walk in, you want, for example, the barista to know their name and know their favorite drink and have a quick transaction and so on and so forth. That you can try to control. You can try to control the quality of the coffee. You can try to control that the stores aren't shabby and run down. You can't control that somebody has a bad day and they take it out on Starbucks. But if you do your job right, from bigger than employment, from just a brand perspective, there should be enough consistent, positive brand expressions out there so that when people get out in the Twittersphere and start saying Starbucks sucks because ... that's one voice. It's one perspective, and you've got 25,000 other perspectives that say, yeah, well, I got my coffee on time and the barista recognized me. So that's really the name of the game. I don't think social media changes it enormously, but what it does do is illustrate that brands aren't about, and they've never been about, controlling the message. You can't do it. They're about
a second. Let's go back to Dr. John. Anybody else can jump in as well after I ask my question. If he's saying, and he's right, that there's a lot more channels for the ordinary guy, the disgruntled ex-employee in particular, to get on and say crummy things about your company on a forum, for instance, then how can it be the same as it used to be? They never had that channel before. They could tell their pal it wouldn't get very far, and he said that in his long article.
No, I completely agree with that. I'm not saying that there's no change. I'm saying that what's changed is organizations used to be able to say, we can control the message, and now they're becoming it's becoming clear they can't to them. It's always been clear.
You said they never could.
Hold on. The reason is because when there's a conflict between what the advertising says and what my experience is, and I tell my friend, my verbal word of mouth will always beat advertising every single time, right? So what's happened is a proliferation of channels that amplify that beyond my conversation over my garden fence with my neighbor that make organizations absolutely have to pay attention. See, organizations used to believe that if we just broadcast crap broadly enough, it'll stick and people will buy it. It didn't. When the truth was, when the advertising message and the truth didn't line up, the truth always eventually won out. But hey, until recently, it was possible to believe that the advertising worked. I think the big message now is employers understand advertisers understand, corporations understand, that you have to come a whole lot closer to the real truth than
okay,
they
so
knew
doc,
they had
to before. Listen, there's not much time, Dave. Let me talk, okay?
Go.
What Dr. John said was wrong. He said they used to control the message, and you're saying that's an illusion. He specifically said they could say anything they wanted about the company to these sucker candidates, and the candidate wouldn't have any way to find out if it was true or not. Now they can go to Glassdoor, they can go to Vault.com, they can, you know, check on Google or, you know, some blog search engine, and they can find out guys who don't like that company.
Isn't it the case, though, I mean, really, that most companies don't have an employer brand and probably never really will beyond what someone might have heard from their cousin that either got fired there or their friend down the street that works there and seems to be okay with it. I mean, just how far really can you take employer brand for companies that most people you just drive by them on your way to the store. You don't know anything about them.
In fact, let me just carry that farther. I had other questions for Jerry. Jerry claims that employer brand makes absolutely no difference in hiring. Is a recruiter going to sell the brand, or is it irrelevant?
Well, I mean, here's where my obvious self-interest comes in. I think that if the brand's any good, the brand's going to help the recruiter sell the business. So, yeah, I believe the recruiter's going to sell the brand.
I agree with you about that, Dave. And I think Harry just said as well, when he's dealing with the top companies on the Fortune 500, they sell themselves. Everybody knows who they are. That proves that their brand means something. Am I right, Dave?
Yes and no. I mean, they sell themselves in the sense that people know who they are. The question I'd have for you is, just because I know, say, what Intel's brand stands for, does that mean I know what it's like to work for Intel? Probably not. And the employer brand piece clarifies the, okay, you know our products, you know our services, but do you know our people and do you know how it is to work here part of the equation?
Segues perfectly into what I was going to say, Animal.
Okay, but he's the guest. Can he have a chance?
Sure.
Here, Jeff. Thank you.
Man. I'm just going to hold
okay.
it. I'm just going to hold it.
Dave. Yeah, well, that's it. Go ahead.
Okay. You want to talk to Dave, Jerry, Jeff? Jeff Lipschultz.
Well, I'm just saying I would like to say that I wholeheartedly agree with what he's saying, that being at Suff Railway, for example, when people out there are thinking about a place to work, they don't think of working at a railroad, and they don't think it'd be a glamorous job. And they've done a very good job as a Fortune 200 company to create materials, videos, and everything else that they can sell to the students that are in universities on working there. And same thing for places like Motorola. You're absolutely right that when you talk about a product, it's one thing. When you talk about working there, it's another. And good companies that focus on building an employer brand create material specifically to speak to that audience very well. And as a recruiter, I agree also, it's a lot easier to say, here are materials you can look at. You don't take it from my word. Look at the stuff they're doing and the types of jobs you'd be working on
okay,
if you
got it,
work there.
Got it. Thank you.
Which has nothing
very
to
good.
Do with their employer.
Hold on, Jerry. I want to talk to Dave for a second. We got 15 minutes left. Dave, from
yeah.
the questions that Mark D. Sullivan gave you, what he's asking is if he's going to hire a branding specialist, how can he tell the phonies or the lousy guys from the good guys like yourself? What question should he be asking you?
Is this
what
branding
do you
look or employment
at?
Branding?
Employment branding. That's David's specialty. Go ahead, Dave. David Kippen.
I'm getting confused.
Tell us that.
Yeah, well, I think it comes down to asking questions to me that will either indicate I understand the industry or
which
I don't.
Which questions?
Well, questions about whether or not I understand the industry. Tell me, what have you done in high tech, for example? List some of the brands you've worked with. Tell me some of the challenges you've faced. Have you talked to people in the marketplaces I'm interested in?
Don't you go into areas you've never worked in before? I mean, are you saying they only want to hire you based on your previous experience? What if, you know, so somebody came to you and said, I'm thinking of hiring you and I'm looking at some other people and you've never worked in my field or my industry. You know, why should I go with you? Are you saying right now that they shouldn't go with me?
No, I think the next
step, if you're interested in the approach the person brings to the table, if you think they're smart, if you think they have good things to say, and most importantly, if the chemistry is good, because you're going to be spending a lot of time together, then the next question becomes, okay, if you haven't had that exactly applicable experience, how can you build a bridge from what you've done that's relevant to what we're doing? For example, if we have a lot of customer service functions that we're hiring for, and you've done a lot of work around customer service in a different segment or sector, show me that's applicable. Show me you can think based on what you've done in ways that help what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so you have to find some kind of experience that you've already had that is relevant to what they want, right? So if it's not their industry, it's the department that they're trying to hire for. Is that what you're saying?
It's the talent, exactly. Show me that you understand the kind of people we're trying to find and that you're going to be able to get stuff out of people like that that helps us figure out how to talk to them better.
Hold on a sec, Dave. I read some of your articles yesterday. We're not going to get a chance to discuss them. But one thing you said made this all a little clearer for me. Maybe it'll help Jerry and other third-party recruiters like us. Here's what your focus is. You've got a company that wants to differentiate itself in terms of its product or service. So first they have to identify their differentiators. Then the employment brand is you look at the best employees and you say, these are the guys who can help us deliver those differentiators. So what differentiates them is the employment brand. The employees who most support the differentiators for the product or service, what differentiates them is what you're going to focus on. You're going to look at those guys, and you're going to try to sell those jobs to people like them. Am I right about that? Is that really what you're doing?
Exactly right.
Okay.
That's exactly
right. But
none
of that is going to matter if the position itself doesn't have challenging work, good pay, and reasonable benefits. So
some people don't want challenging work. They want easy work, right?
Well, then they certainly don't care about the employer brand.
Yes, they do. They want to know that it's a place that's relaxing and fun to be at.
I think all of it's important.
You know, like Starbucks is a pretty easy example of an employer brand, if there is one. But I've made a note of, you know, the clients that I'm working with right now. Nobody would really even know of their products. My clients make wire harnesses, heavy-duty casters for shipping companies. They make sauna buoys.
I'm going to interrupt you because we're so short of time, but I believe, based on what I read on Dave's blog yesterday, I believe that you could go into any company, analyze, you know, what kind of people they need to do a great job there. Different companies maybe require different types of people. I don't know. That's another question. But you analyze their best workers, and you start marketing to people like them. That's essentially what he seems to be doing, sort of profiling
the best guys. I just don't think that
I got a question, though. I want to come back to one of Mark's questions, and then I'll let anybody talk if there's time. Mark said, how do we go, recruiters go, and get a senior executive to sign off on a campaign? Because you have to make a business case, you know, that show that you're going to bring in additional candidates, good candidates, you know, increase revenue, increase traffic to the career site. There's a lot of markers or sort of guarantees, Dave, that you're going to have to sell to these guys, aren't there, so that they can go to the boss and say, look, this is what they're going to do for us exactly, and will you approve it on that basis? Am I right?
At the end of the process, there are a ton of metrics we can deliver that say that the employer brand has had an impact. Time to fill, time to hire, cost per hire, all of those things we expect to deliver back improvements on them. But until we've done the work, we don't know what the improvements are going to be. Like you take your car in for a tune-up, you know it's going to run better. You just don't know how much better until the tune-up's done, right? It's the same idea. A few months ago, I would have said there's very little recruitment-driven employer brand work, but it's still happening because people need to engage the workforce. And that's simply saying, we get it, we get why you're here, we get what's important to you, and your values are our values. Right now, it actually seems that there's a pretty significant shift. I'm having a lot of conversations with organizations who are saying, I see a turnaround coming, or in financial services, it's already started, and we can't afford to lose our top talent, number one. Number two, we've beaten them up pretty much, so we need to do something right now.
Okay, I want to thank Jerry Albright and David Kippen. These guys like to talk about the show. I'm going to let them talk after the music. Dave and Jerry, thank you!
Is anybody still here?
Yeah, Jerry.
He needs to turn off the music. Holy crap.
Well, I thought Animal was going to cut us off.
I believe in miracles.
The first half hour was kindergarten, and the second hour was like an elitist conversation.
Kindergarten?
No, it wasn't that. It was maybe elementary
school. Free for all. No,
We use terms like invoice, send out. You use terms like matrix. I don't know.
Value proposition.
Pivot tables and all that.
You know, I. Who else is still here? Table. Ray Ann, Andy, Carl,
Ray
are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Who else? Anybody?
Hello, Jerry. It's Laura calling from Calgary.
Laura.
Hey,
hi, Calgary, buddy.
How's it going?
Hey. Going great.
You know Animal's still here. Come on, he's got to be.
Animal.
Yeah.
Hey, man, we're just talking.
Go ahead. Your time.
Can y'all hear me? Who's that?
Hey, this is Mark Sullivan.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
There he is. Yeah, I was able to call in around 11:45, but I don't think y'all recognize the number or something.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
We're doing good. That was a good show.
I start to drift a little bit just because I don't know much about employer branding.
Why is that, Jerry?
Yeah. I don't know.
But that's why we listen, so we learn, right?
Yeah, I want to learn.
Jerry,
but
I don't believe you because you are an excellent recruiter, okay? Mm-hmm. And I think that you have to know the employer that you're working for, and you have to be able to sell them. Well, that's employer branding. That's part of it.
That's the recruiter's part of it. That's not all of it.
Well,
the company has a role, too.
I said that's the basis of it. That's part that Jerry needs to know.
For me, I'm thinking in bigger terms. I think, you know, if there's a brand out there, I would probably be aware of it. And as I think about my clients, I really don't know from a regular person's perspective. Sure, I get my insight from talking to them and asking the questions, but a regular person wouldn't know a thing about this wire harness manufacturer that employs 700 people.
Tell me what it's like after hours to clean out the wastebaskets of this firm. I'm sorry.
No, but Jerry, that just puts more onus on you, right? I mean, you're absolutely right. Some companies do not do anything in this regard, and all of that's put on the recruiter's shoulders to take care of it. And it sounds like a lot of your clients are just that way. There's others that you can leverage some of what they're doing. But both answers are right. Everybody's saying the right thing.
Yeah, hey, don't use big words like leverage, okay? This is the after show. We all have cards in our hands.
You
know, Animal is pretty quick to drop the hammer and cut people off. We didn't get any chance to disagree with anybody.
I thought given last week's show, though, I thought he was clearly much more. He was demonstrating he was going to be in control of this show early on. And I thought he did a really good job.
You mean because no fisticuffs broke out and there weren't any threatened knife fights?
That was pretty scrappy, wasn't it?
Floating outside of New Jersey. I'm just wondering if there's bodies floating outside of New Jersey.
Oh my God! I'm glad I don't live up there.
So let's rate the show. I give it a B minus.
What, today?
Yeah,
I'd go with a B plus.
No, no, no.
It was solid.
There was a bit of highbrowness about the employment branding marketing.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. I got to tell you, it in the past people sure have been able to control the brand, and they're doing it today. Anybody ever call Geico to see if you can save 15%? It's bullshit. I've called them 20 times. I can't save any money with them. Okay? That's controlling. Why do you think they spend millions of dollars?
Okay, great. I understand.
Yeah, but
we know the Geico brand.
Hey, but you know what? Those,
we don't know the employment brand
Mr.
of Geico.
No, that's exactly right. But I tell you what.
Am I going to work for Geico or am I going to work for the lizard?
They're not the same thing.
I just said millions worth.
No, the product is not the same as employment.
Exactly right. Correct.
No, that's what I heard.
That's not what you heard.
I will say this. Hey, Albright.
That's all true.
Albright, I did have a...
Hey, everybody, chill out. Andy's got something to say.
No, I did have a... That deal I was working on this week, though, I did look over on my desk at one point and see a stack of money with some eyes on it, and it spoke to me.
If a corporate recruiter from Geico were to call a candidate, do you think the candidate would be more likely to return that phone call? I mean, it's an unsolicited call. They did not submit a resume. They found them on a job board or through LinkedIn or whatever resource.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
Of the Geico commercials, they're going to get a call back. It's just similar like when I did contract recruiting for AOL, when AOL was near its peak, you know, and actually right before they started losing all its subscribers due to the more broadband internet, I never had to go out and source anybody. Everyone just threw their resumes at us. I called, hey, I'm from Mark Sullivan from AOL. I got callbacks instantly because it was AOL. And they didn't know anything about the company culture or what we did or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That didn't happen until later in the conversation. Now, working for smaller companies as a corporate recruiter, somewhat like Jerry's talking about, a 700-person organization, someone's going to say, hey, I don't know you. I don't know your organization. Why should I come work for you? That's when it's the recruiter's job to start then discussing the employment brand. What do we have from a benefits perspective? What's the work environment like? What, are we a leader in our industry, that even though it may not be a well-known industry? Those types of things. And that was my point with the question. You take not the big companies, the smaller companies where recruiters sitting there saying, I need to drive traffic to us somehow. I can't spend 8 to 10 hours a day sourcing nonstop and spending 30 minutes selling the company. I need help. So why would I go hire an Aviva and I go to your site and I see general or vague points and I'm like, well, I don't know if I want to employ this one. I need someone who's going to give me metrics right up front that I can take to my executive team and say, we need this. We need to start doing some kind of marketing. We have no budget dollars for it right now, but this is how it's going to help the organization in getting us recognition. If we don't do any marketing outside to drive people to us, what can we do from a marketing perspective, whether it's on campuses, on social media sites, and so on and so forth?
Those are some great points.
I think I'll give you an example of a company that fits somewhere in the middle. It was FedEx Kinko's about 5 years ago. They, you know, when you think of them from the big brand point of view, yeah, that could be a company people would go to, you know, the opportunities. But it didn't take much to dig into different websites to find out they were really screwed up inside. And they could look at that, and they could look at that stuff themselves. I mean, there's all kinds of innuendos and stuff going on, and people messing around with other people in there, just all out there for anyone to look at. That's when you say, I got to spend some money. I need to tip the scales, like we were talking about earlier, to put out enough good stuff to outweigh some of this bad stuff. Because at that time, if you were researching them, that's all that was out there, and I would never go work for them based on what I was reading.
Now they're trying to change their name to FedEx Office, and it's very unsuccessful because Kinko's has a huge brand name. They shouldn't drop it. So they aren't handling that very well.
Are we to learn, though, from this, is, or are we supposed to be gathering that product brand is the same as employer brand?
They're not, but they're related. They're
they
so
benefit.
Close.
I mean, but most companies are going to benefit from the product
from
brand.
The brand.
I mean, the product brand is good.
Product brand, absolutely.
Right. As a regular person, I am wholeheartedly unaware of...
I wouldn't call you regular.
Well, I'm not.
As a corn-burning citizen.
As a corn-burning citizen.
Most people don't realize, Jerry, you live in a... You like to call it a compound.
Anyway, don't get that. Don't get too real. What were you going to say?
But I am unaware of the employment brand, other than from my clients, and it's not even an employment brand. I just think it's a trendy topic.
Yeah,
I don't know the employment brand of IT team manufacturing down the street. I don't know
the employment brand.
Because they
don't think they may not have one.
Because they may not have one. This is new enough where a lot of companies out there haven't done anything. So you're absolutely right. You're going to go to lots of companies and say, I don't know anything about what it'd be like to work there. Absolutely right. But there's other ones who have bigger budgets, and that's where it starts, right, who are spending the money on there on this because they need to be competitive in getting people to come to them. And maybe they're not using a whole lot of external recruiters, and that's why we're not
familiar. Let me argue with Jerry for a second. Hold on. Jerry,
hey,
you're not looking
here.
You're not looking for it.
Hey,
you're not looking for
it. Hey.
Who is that?
You just
chill
out,
please.
Oh, show. All right, I'm with you.
Looking
we'll
for a job. You're not looking for a job. If you were looking
right.
for a job there, maybe
right.
you would find out about their employment brand. A?
Correct. Yeah.
Right.
If they
is that A
one.
As in the letter A or Canadian A?
Canadian
A.
Animal, I don't agree
with you
Canadian
at all. You don't find out about an employment brand. You find out specifics about employment at a particular
right.
company.
That's
an employment cool. brand is the feeling and the image that someone has already built. So you don't
well,
find out about somebody's
employment
brand.
Best places to work in the
brand.
U.S. Best places companies to work in the U.S. Best places to work for women. And best places to work for minorities. Best places, all those
oh.
programs,
oh.
all those
oh.
programs are part of wrapped up as in a employment brand. Unfortunately, in order to get on those lists, it's an application process.
Mm-hmm.
So an organization, a 700-person wiring organization, they say, you know what, we got great benefits. We got a great culture here. We, the employees get free lunch. They get free breakfast, whatever all those benefits are, but no one knows about it. They say, you know what could happen? We could apply for America's Best Place to Work, spend a little money there, get on this list. Anyone ever hear of SAS Software in North Carolina?
That's an actual place to work.
Yeah, remember when they hit the news, what was it, 10, 15 years ago, about all the benefits and the on-site doctors
and
the on-site daycare?
Yeah, they were on like 60 minutes or something.
Yeah. They're
gave you a D-plus, Jerry.
What was that, Ryan?
Blake Cannon just tweeted, I give a D-plus to Jerry.
A D-plus, huh?
Blake Cannon, that's Mike Raymer. Sorry.
D-plus.
That is what, from a culture perspective, that is a brand. So you're right, Jerry, in saying that people don't, the employment brand is part of the feeling, it's part of what you experience, but from a company perspective, the employment brand, like how are we branding ourselves as an employer, brand, corporate speak, employer of choice or best place to work, or one where people, when they apply, they'll sit there and when they do their research, they'll say, oh, look at all these great awards they've won. They're on the best
mm-hmm.
places to work. Now, there's a company I used to work for that was on all those awards lists, and it was the worst company I ever worked for. It was very political. It was just a nightmare to work for. My management, not just my immediate manager, but the whole line management was just awful. I would go and say, all right, I'm not getting this issue resolved. I'm going one notch up. Maybe they'll help me out. And I kept getting stonewalled at all these different places that I went to a partner within the firm to seek help. He did his best, and then it was basically I was told, hey, man, you're just not they just view you as not part of the team. And I was like, okay, I'm out. So, but they had on-site daycare. They had an on-site gym. They had sleep rooms where employees could take naps. They had all the, and I keep seeing them win all these awards, and I'm like, it's the worst effing place I ever worked as a recruiter. And within the recruitment community in the D.C. metro area, it is well known it is one of the worst employers to work as a recruiter. And so when people go there, we're like, good luck because you're not going to last very long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the reputation gets out within the small crowd of people that have worked somewhere.
Yeah.
But by and large, say when I'm loading up in my jumbo cart at Walmart, I am unaware of any of those products' employment brand. And furthermore, any of their social media
true.
Branding
that's
stuff.
That's not true.
That's
you wouldn't
yeah,
put it
I,
in
I,
your
I,
cart. That is not true.
But
yeah.
You're talking about marketing brands when you're filling up a grocery cart, not going to work
well,
for
but
the
that's
place.
What,
you're,
they're
not
there's
the same.
There's this push to combine all branding into this total candidate, employer, purchaser experience, and I think it's a farce.
Yeah, let's talk about the first half hour of the show.
It was engaging and relevant.
Wow. Where is Levy when you need him?
I found it surprising that Animal thinks going to see an employee is stupid.
That was shocking.
That was a long conversation. That was a lot of time right there.
Hey,
Jerry, is that a $30,000 net? I'd go see the guy. I'd send him a Christmas present.
Yeah.
Can we get these voice on that?
What I do for some of these guys.
I didn't weigh in on that part, but Jerry, I agree with you that seeing someone eye to eye is a lot different than talking over the phone. I mean, someone they're going to lie to you. It's easier to do that over the phone than it is right to your face.
Or to not even tell me the lie. Don't even connect with me and just move on.
Right. I mean, my opinion on that is that you have to weigh it on risk. If you think this person's a high risk in any category, then you go see him. If this person, if you've dealt with them before and everything else, you don't have to visit them again, do you?
Well,
I mean,
working for myself in my office, I like to get out and go see people.
I figured there was a second reason.
Well,
that's it. Yeah.
And all the way there and all the way back, if I see it looks like a brand new big company, it helps me jot down companies I want to market to. And
you ever walk into some of those?
You're not stopping and talking to them, Jerry? You're not stopping and talking?
No, I call them.
Don't they know who you are?
Vacuum cleaner salesman.
Well, you can call them from the parking lot. Hey, I'm going to be in your area in about an hour. Can I drop in?
Yeah, that's a bit flim-flammy. It might work for people. I like seeing my clients' trucks on the highway. It just makes me feel good. I feel like I'm a part of, some of my contractors they're putting in warehousing and barcoding systems, or they're working on their shipping software. I just like being a part of it. I feel like I am a part of it.
The next time I'm in Indiana, I'm going to rent a truck and I'm going to slap one of those magnets on the side that says verbal summary. What do you think that'll do to him, guys?
Okay, but how remote are you from? I'm not sure exactly where you're located in India. Are you near Indianapolis or are you near a big city?
Indianapolis is a little over two hours south of me. I'm in the northeast corner of Indiana.
Northeast. I mean, you have to drive somewhere, no matter what. Anyway, just by where you're located. It's different than working in DFW, where we have clients, in a huge area.
Well,
it should make it easier for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. We can drive half hour instead of. So, I mean, you have to make big drives because that's just the way you're set up.
Yeah.
I buy it.
Yeah, it's cool. It's all good. Well, guys, thanks for your time today. I think Animal's getting a bit bunched up, waiting for us to wrap up here. I think I just sensed that. Is he still on, Animal?
Yep.
He's babysitting us.
Animal, we love you.
Flora?